Good evening, everyone. I'm Hank Jones, and you are listening to Hank Jones Polysports here on Blog Talk Radio, part of Global Patriot Radio Network here. And we are off and flying because we had a little technical difficulty earlier. So I'm just going to bring Mike on right now. Mike, you there?
I'm here, Hank. How's it going?
How's it going?
Doing well.
Yeah. Were you hearing me before?
No, I was not hearing you at all. And then, you know, you indicated you thought you weren't going to be able to go, but it looks like you worked it out and told me to hop back on here. It's 30
years time.
Going.
Yeah, it's exactly. Okay. That's why we're going to go quick because we got a Hawkeye game at 7:30, so I don't want to miss that. We're going to dispense with all the other stuff like the obituaries that I did in the beginning of the show because, well, nobody cares, really. So let's get right to it.
Can I make one comment on that, though, Hank? Just one guy?
Absolutely.
You did hear Robert Clary, Corporal LeBeau
from
did pass away.
Well, let's quickly run through a couple key ones. Ray Guy was a big one, second best punter ever.
Oh, no, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he died the third.
Yes.
Second best punter ever behind Reggie Roby, of course. Aaron Carter, everyone heard about. Other biggies. Jennifer Aniston's dad, who was he played Victor Kiriakis. Kat Gallagher, the comedian. And Robert Clary,
yes.
LeBeau. Other ones were, not as big. So let's get right to the Trump announcement. I'm going to list a couple things, and then I'm going to have you get your comments, since I know you heard it. As expected, he's running for president for 2024. Announcement was less aggressive than he's been, but it did hit home on what he wants to accomplish. He made a good point of saying it wasn't about party politics. It's about America and the American people. Something he said that was really important, I thought. He said, this will not be my campaign. This will be our campaign altogether, because the only force strong enough to defeat the massive corruption we are up against is you, the American people. So I thought he made some great points. You heard him. I mean, you watched it live. What did you think?
Yeah, I thought it was a very good speech. I have to say, after the way the midterms went, I was a little bit dubious about him coming out and announcing so quick, and was kind of feeling like, you know, maybe it's time for a generational change, and to go to the new generation, Ron DeSantis, and I still feel that way a little bit. But I have to say, he did give a good speech. It was sort of a throwback to the 2015-2016 era, the initial campaign, talking about what happened in 2020, but his vision of America, what's gone wrong with it, and how we can get it back.
Yeah, and I think that he talked about refortifying the military. He talked about term limits, which I thought was important. Another thing he said, I think that is so, because I don't care what anyone says, the longer it goes, the ways that they can, spruce it up, the more we're open to the corruption. I mean, I'm sorry, Kerry Lake, I think, is a prime example. I mean, just those things that happen. So he also talked about lifetime ban on lobbying former member of Congress. Now, do you think that's something that would even fly? Like, if it got to the Supreme Court?
Well, I think it'd be a great idea, but I don't know. I mean, I think you have to talk about the world of the realistic. Congress isn't going to vote to do that, and I don't think that courts would uphold the ban. I could be wrong on that, but
I mean, I suppose
if you just ask me, do I think it's a good idea? I do.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, I think it's the Kerry Lake thing. I'll talk about that in a second. The other stuff, some sports stuff, non-Iowa related. You saw, obviously the shooting in Virginia. And they canceled their game against Coastal Carolina, and there's no announcement on what's going to happen with the Virginia Tech one. But it's hard to believe. I mean, where does this even happen? I mean, it just makes me it's sad. But here's what I was questioning. The guy was in a hearing recently, but he didn't make any kind of a plea. So why would they? He didn't have a lawyer yet. The judge appointed a public defender on the spot. But why would they have a hearing if they don't know what he's going to – I mean, isn't that weird that they would have a hearing where there's no plea?
I'm sorry. I got a little bit distracted. Hank, can you reset
okay.
me up
so
here?
Sorry about that. The accused in the Virginia shooting appeared in a hearing, but he didn't give. He didn't have an attorney. The judge appointed a public defender on the spot. But I mean, why would they even have the hearing if he doesn't have representation yet, and he's not gonna? You know, they don't know that he's going to enter any kind of plea. Why would they have even had the hearing? I don't get that. Is there something weird there?
It's somewhat unusual, but I would remind you that everyone has a right to represent themselves, and okay. I don't know if he'd indicated that that's what he wanted to do.
Did he say that at the hearing?
Yeah, well, there might have been the court might have had an indication that he hadn't hired anybody, and a further impression that he was going to go pro se. So once he went into the hearing and said he did want to have an attorney, then that was that. Yeah. He had to stop and let him do that.
And their basketball canceled the game with you and I for Monday. You know, people are thinking, well, it's the basketball team, not the football. It's not unprecedented. I mean, remember after Chris Street died. The Hawks postponed like 2 weeks worth of games. I mean, it was only like 4 games, but I mean, they postponed several. So I get that part of it, but some people are wondering whether they'll get it back. So speaking of basketball, though, 3 Big Ten teams in the top 25, 6 more are receiving votes, including the Hawks. Not much in the way of upsets, although here's one. This is a good, nice feeling of poetic justice. Michigan State, you know, they lost to Gonzaga, but then last night they beat Kentucky. So,
yeah, that's a good bounce back.
It's also satisfying.
I don't know how strong Kentucky is this year, but they're always usually strong.
Yeah, they came in ranked 4, and here's the part that's weird. C.J. Frederick is starting for them. I mean, it's not going to last long because he's. I mean, the guy's the ultimate glass foot. He's going to have something go wrong, but
right.
We're talking about our game. You know, we got a brutal stretch that starts tonight. Seton Hall at 7:30, so we'll get off before 7:30, and then next week we got Clemson, and then Georgia Tech, Duke, Iowa State, and then Wisconsin before we have like 2 other cupcakes or whatever. How do you think we're going to come through that? If you had to guess right now.
Well. You know, see, the thing is, though, that I mean, these are good. It's a tough row. I mean, let's not going to get around it. I don't know how strong Duke is. This is the first year in what 40 years without Krzyzewski as head coach. So we'll see what if they are able to maintain the level they did under him. Seton Hall, I don't know a whole lot about them, but they're traditionally a basketball power. This game's at the Prudential Center in Newark, so it's pretty much a home game for them, I think.
Yeah.
Certainly the advantage over Iowa. And then Georgia Tech, ACC, I think that game's in Iowa City. That'll be a help. And Iowa State, you know, the way they went last year, every reason to think they're going to be tough. So if they even went 2-2, I wouldn't be disappointed. I hope they do better. But, I mean, that's a tough 4 games.
Yeah, no doubt. Unlike years past, we will know by Christmas how good we are. You know, I mean, whether we're
I think I would say that even if they don't do play particularly well, I mean, I think they'll do good. But if they went 1-3 or lost all 4, I think you know, depending on how you know bad it was, the losses were. Early in the season. It's good to get some tests, especially when you don't know where you're at, because you'll get better. And with basketball in the NCAA tournament, what really matters is once you get into conference play and how you finish.
Yeah.
So you can afford to drop some games early, learn from them, get better, and I think it's generally on the upside.
Yeah, it just worries me a bit. So here's a couple political things. I don't know what's going to happen to Pelosi, but supposedly some people have said she's in line for an ambassadorship, but elsewhere it's being reported that Dopey Joe has been calling and pushing her to take the minority leader position in the House. Do you think she'll stay around long enough to hand over the gavel, or do you think she's the type that would not show up for that?
I think if they'd won the majority and she could be speaker again, I think she definitely probably would try to stay. She is 83, I think, now.
Yeah.
Do you want to be minority leader after you've been speaker? Yeah, she had it once where she was speaker, then went back to minority leader, now speaker again. She knows as well as anybody what it's like to be minority leader in the House of Representatives. And it does not compare to being speaker. And my personal view is I hope she stays, because I'd love to see the GOP majority just kind of start slamming everything down her throat while she sits there and takes it. And I want to see her handing that gavel over to the Republican speaker in January.
Yeah.
That picture will be worth, $1,000. But I do find it hard to believe that she's going to really want to do that, be minority leader for very long.
Yeah. According to Vito, she asked for the ambassadorship to Italy. That's what Vito put in the chat room. So, I mean, if she's going, I don't know. I mean, it just, to me, I just see her as the type that would not be there to hand over the gavel. You know what I mean? I mean, she strikes me as that type. That's my thing. And another thing with Dopey Joe, he keeps getting smacked down on the student loan debt, which we're not really shocked. What kind of bums me out, though, is that what if it had happened before the election? You think that would have changed some votes?
It's hard to say. I think, we were so surprised at what happened anyway. I just don't know. It's hard. It could have made a difference, but how did things turn out the way they did anyway, when you consider how the country was going?
But as we mentioned, we talked about last week, for instance, Fetterman didn't debate until October 26th, but look when a lot of those ballots were cast. A lot of those ballots were cast before then. So who knows, So on the Senate front, Rick Scott challenged McConnell for leadership, and evidently several people urged not to have a vote yet until the Georgia runoff, but somehow McConnell pushed it through, and McConnell is still going to be the, our minority leader. So, I mean, that doesn't
right, – right.
But what do you think that does for Rick Scott's political future, at least as far as the Senate goes?
Well, there's like – if I don't know if you remember when we were in college, I think you took the same class I may have taken. You had to read the Prince, Machiavelli's The Prince. One of the great lines from that book is "Never wound the prince." Well, that's what Scott's done here. Whereas Napoleon once said, "If you're going to set out to take Vienna, take Vienna." So he tried to depose the king and he failed, and he's probably going to pay a price for that now. He's already in the doghouse, because remember, he ran the Senate campaign that kind of went bust.
Did.
So I don't, and that may be one reason why he only got, I think he got beat 37-10. So,
yeah.
I don't know.
McConnell is the epitome of the petty, vindictive little bitch. I mean, that's the thing that gets me.
Right,
but,
right.
He's
going to make him pay.
Yeah, but I mean, a lot of people in the GOP blame McConnell for not funding or helping campaign, for some of these guys. I mean, so it's kind of
it's kind of
interesting.
Yeah.
The other thing reminds me of The Godfather 2, when he's talking to, when Tom Hagen's talking to Frankie at the end. When a plot against the emperor failed, the guy went home and opened up his veins, and his family was taken care of. I mean, it's a pretty apt thing. And Vito just says he predicts Rick Scott will not seek re-election. So that's a thing. So
you think that might happen, huh? Well, I don't
know. He might not run.
Up, I guess in 24. Yeah, he's up in 24. That's right.
Yeah, it's possible. I could see it happening. I mean, if the rest of the party, I don't think the rest of the party would turn on him per se, but.
Well, the thing is, though, Mitch is getting up there, and maybe after 2 years he might chuck it in, especially two more years in the minority. Although Republican prospects are really good in 24, because the thing that was always against him this cycle was there's like 20 Republicans up against 14 Democrats in 24. It's 23 Democrats and 10 Republicans, and there's just a lot of real, you know, opportunities.
Yeah.
Republicans are bound to gain seats, bound to get the majority, I think.
Vito pointed out McConnell spent $7 million in an Alaska Senate race that had two Republicans running. So he spent $7 million to keep, you know, to basically save Murkowski. Now, Murkowski's done, right? She lost, correct?
No. Remember, they have that weird ranked choice voting up there. So she's in this close race with this other Republican. And,
so that's not decided
50%.
Yet?
They haven't even gotten all the votes counted yet. They're like California. And then once that happens, it's another week to get to the rank, to figure out the ranked choice stuff. And then this whole thing was set up to help her, because what's going to happen is there's some Democrats running. They're going to fall out, and she's banking on getting all their votes, push her over the top.
Speaking of more election stuff, it sounds like Carrie Lake is not conceding yet. I mean, supposedly she's down by over 20,000 votes, but one of the things they're citing, obviously, the Election Day problems. They're also citing the fact that Katie Hobbs, who is her challenger, is the Secretary of State and thus conducts the election and should have recused herself. And then it turns out Maricopa County Recorder Steve Richer and Board of Supervisors Chair Bill Gates, and I assume it's not the same Bill Gates, but that they actually started and contributed to a PAC that campaigned against her. So that's, supposedly those are all things that might come into play for some kind of investigation. Do you see it playing that way or not?
I wish she'd won. I think that's a little bit of whistling past the graveyard. I just don't think any of that's going to overturn the election. She's down about 20,000 votes. I don't know how you make that up. If you remember, for the first, like, almost week after the election, four or 5 days, it was like, as soon as we count all those ballots that are late arriving in Maricopa County, I've got it. And it turned out not to be true.
Yeah.
And I don't want to get anybody listening, you know, thinking that this is going to, I just don't think that's realistic. I think she's, you know, obviously there was some improprieties. I think Katie Hobbs as Secretary of State should have recused herself from any role in selection as the administrator, you know, as Secretary of State. She didn't do that, but I just don't think that's going to happen. I have to be honest.
Yeah, I would agree, but I hope she still pushes it a little bit, because I think people have been talking about, you know, are the Dems going to cheat again? And I frankly don't think they, you know, I don't know if they cheated the same way, but I mean, you know, certain stuff just, you know, you have to wonder. I mean, you know, dumps, you know, vote dumps that happened that doomed both her and Blake Masters. I mean, come on, you know, that just doesn't seem. You know, and why are states stopping them, and then they have these dumps that do? It just doesn't seem right to me. You pointed out something yesterday about Poland, about the Russian missile. Looks like they're going to invoke NATO Article 4. Can you explain that real quick, or do you know much? I mean, if anyone can explain it,
just a little bit. Article 5 is the most well-known, which says that an attack on one is an attack on all. Basically, when that's invoked, you go to war. Article 4 is sort of it's sort of like yellow alert to that being red alert, I guess is the best way to put it.
Okay.
And
go ahead.
It just means, you know, there's a problem. We need to look at this. We need to come together. And, it's not Article 5. That would be much more serious. I think it's the yellow alert to red alert kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, basically, it calls for consultation with all member nations when any of them, in the opinion of any of them, the territory, political independence, or security is threatened. It's been done 7 times since NATO was created. The last time, of course, was the Russian invasion of Ukraine. So we'll see. So let's get to college football. A little bit of a shakeup over the weekend. Oregon lost, Ole Miss lost, UCLA, Texas, Illinois, and Kentucky. by the way, Hawkeye commit Hayden Caden Proctor, who went to the Oregon game for an official visit, was there for them losing. So hopefully that was a a deterrent. So, but Georgia plays at Kentucky. USC and UCLA play, and Utah and Oregon play. For the Big Ten, it's pretty much comes down to the winner between, you know, Michigan and Ohio State. At least that's going to be the East rep. West is still wide open, of course. So there's four teams right now tied: Illinois, Purdue, Minnesota, and Iowa. Iowa has the tiebreaker over Purdue and Wisconsin. Should Wisconsin get back? Illinois has tiebreakers over Iowa, Wisconsin, and Minnesota. Purdue has a tiebreaker over Illinois and Minnesota. And should it happen back there, Wisconsin has it over Purdue. Right now, Minnesota has no tiebreakers, but obviously that could change Saturday. Are you shocked, seriously, at this point? I know, but are you shocked that we're still in it? I mean,
yeah, I am. If you'd talked to me a few weeks ago, but since that time, we're on a three-game winning streak. And, you know, had nice wins over Purdue and Wisconsin here back-to-back. And I'll tell you, Illinois, who has the edge on Iowa because they beat him, has Michigan next week. So they're going to take another loss, I think. So I really think if Iowa wins out their next two games, they beat Minnesota and Nebraska.
Oh,
they
may
well find themselves. Yeah, I think
because it would only be
the Big Ten West champ.
It would be us and Purdue, and we have that tiebreaker.
That's right.
So
24-3 in West Lafayette.
I mean, if we win out, we're in. Assuming Illinois loses to Michigan, if they beat Michigan, then more power to them. So, but you know what I'm really liking? I know we keep talking about the offense, and of course we talk about how dominant the defense is. I'm starting to. Have you been watching Jay Higgins? He's been coming in. He's been coming in and sometimes playing with Campbell. But I mean, him and Jacobs being back next year, I'm just not worried as much about our linebacker drop off as I would have been. You know what I mean? It's I just think those two, assuming Jacobs is healthy, I think that looks really good.
Yeah. Well, you know, hopefully we'll get to just a healthy Justin Jacobs, and then Higgins. Yes, he's gotten a lot of PT. He's looked pretty good, pretty darn good to me. I think Iowa's defense, I don't see him dropping off too much. I mean, yeah, we're going to lose some people, Jack Campbell, but we've got a lot of depth, and I think we're going to be – I guess we lose Seth Benson too, but I still think we're going to be okay if we got Jacobs and Higgins back. That'll be a good core to build our linebacker core. I think we got most of our front line back, and, you know, I think maybe lose Merriweather. I don't know in the – backfield.
I think Merriweather is done. And I think Terry Roberts is too. But Jamari Harris would be back.
Is he?
Yeah, Jamari Harris I think would be back because he's a redshirt because he's out this year for injury. So I think he would be back. So let's talk Big Ten this week. I mean, briefly last week, obviously our defense did it, but you made a good point. I think it was good to see our offense punch it in, even though, yeah, they were short fields, but it was good to see them punch it in and not get field goals.
Yeah.
It was key.
That was the key. Everybody talked about having just 146 total yards, but I would point this out. Iowa got two short fields where they started about their own 20, and they punched it in both times.
Yep.
So that just put Wisconsin behind the eight ball in a game of where the defenses dominate. Iowa did what they needed to do when they had the opportunities. And, you know, it was a good – I think it was a good win. I'm not too concerned about 146 yards. Wisconsin's defense is maybe almost on a par with ours, which is saying
exactly
a lot.
Yep.
And, you know, we're not going to face a defense like that in these next two games. And and I don't think I don't even think that Ohio State and Michigan's defense are as good as Wisconsin's.
Yeah, I think they just their problems have been mainly offensive like ours have. So I mean, you know, let's think about the other two times we've beat them since like 2009 or whatever it was. Really, it boiled down to, you know, 2015, that was a defensive win. That wasn't an offensive win. 2020, you know, a lot of people say that was a COVID year, and there were some oddities there and all that stuff. So you kind of, you know, yeah, that was really more an offense win, but it was also the COVID year and all that stuff. So let's quick pick this week's Big Ten games. Illinois at Michigan. I assume you would go with Michigan.
Yeah, I came to Ann Arbor, and Illinois has been a little bit erratic. Michigan's just looked really good. I think they got that game.
Yeah. How about Wisconsin at Nebraska?
You know, Nebraska's struggling, and I think Wisconsin bounces back, and they'll beat them, even though it's at Lincoln.
Yeah, I mean, there's something There's still something to play for
for
Wisconsin.
Absolutely.
So, how about Northwestern at Purdue?
Yeah, you know, Purdue had a tough loss to Iowa, but then they bounced back last week, and Northwestern's probably the worst team in the Big Ten West.
Yeah.
You know, it's close between them
or
and Nebraska,
the Big Ten.
I think Big Ten.
How about Indiana at Michigan State?
You know, that's an interesting game. It's at Michigan State. Michigan State's last couple games, they've done a little better, so I'm going to go with the Spartans on that.
Yeah, agreed. Ohio State at Maryland. I mean, I don't think there's any reason to pretend that Maryland's got a chance. And then Penn State at Rutgers. Obviously, Penn State. I mean, I think
Penn State. Yeah, Penn State.
Yeah. You know, you think about it. This week, okay, there's something. You know, Illinois has a lot more to lose in a sense than Michigan does. I mean, Michigan has everything to lose, but Illinois, you know, they're coming in reeling. Wisconsin and Nebraska. Wisconsin's got something to play for. Northwestern and Purdue, not really. Indiana, Michigan State, that's almost a meaningless game. I mean, it's just really, you know, Penn State, Rutgers, really, I mean, that's just not, you know. So here's our scenario. Minnesota is favored by 3. The over-under is 32.5. Here's the weird part. When they list on ESPN the stats leaders for each category, Petras is the leader in passing yards between the two teams. Laporta is the leader in receiving yards. I mean, that's, you know, that kind of tells you the kind of year both teams are having in a way. So it's not clear Tanner Morgan will play. Arlen Bruce might play.
Okay.
Bo Stevens probably not. So, I mean, I assume like me, you're going to pick the Hawks.
Oh, yeah, I will. It's not easy up there. But I always had good luck against Minnesota in the last few years, against some good Minnesota teams. I think the way I was playing right now with the defense and stuff, that they'll get enough offense to pull that game out. I like Iowa's chances.
Yeah, I agree. If Tanner Morgan doesn't play, I think that's pretty clear that at that point that the Hawks are in. So, you know, I'm going to go with the Hawks as well. So, okay. So because we got to get out of here by 7:30, we're going to talk Artemis last, but we're going to preview it with a special treat that I came up with. I figured we just had to do this, just had to, so here we go.
Hi, gentlemen. A lyricist whose string of hits, in collaboration with Elton John, has made him one of the world's most popular songwriters. Please welcome Bernie Taupin.
Good evening. In 1972, when Elton John and I wrote Rocket Man, it became very popular among the listeners. Due to the interest in the meaning of the song, now in 1978 at the Science Fiction Film Awards, I'm truly proud once again to present my Rocket Man as interpreted by our host, William Shatner. Thank you.
Packed my bags last night, pre-flight, 0 hour, 9 a.m. And I'm gonna be high. There's a kite by then. The earth so much. I miss my wife. Lonely. Out in space. On such a time. And I think it's going to be a long, long time. to touchdown brings me back again to find I'm not the man they think I am back home. Oh, no, 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 I'm a rocket man. Rocket man. Burning out his fumes out here, alone. I think it's going to be a long, long time.
Okay, I had to stop it because it's actually 5 minutes worth. But that, of course, is William Shatner's interpretation of Rocket Man as done at some science fiction show, I think, in 1978. Do you remember actually seeing that?
I think I did, yeah, as a matter of fact. And it's almost as good as his rendition of Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds.
That one, I'm going to have to Google that. I Googled this one and I watched it.
Oh,
so he's
yeah.
like sitting there. He's sitting there, serious, like the serious look, like he's a cabaret lounge singer. He's got like a cigarette in his hand and he's got a drink sitting there on a table. It's absolutely a scream. So anyone listening,
it is. It's hilarious.
You've got to Google William Shatner Rocket Man. Now we do that, of course, in honor of the Artemis launch. Mike and I both talked about wanting to see it. He was not there live. I could have gone outside, but I literally fell asleep and woke up only because I heard the NASA channel in front of me talking about it. So I saw the countdown and I saw the takeoff, the launch. I did not go outside because at my house there's so much tree cover I wouldn't have seen it until way too late. The worst part,
yeah.
Here's the worst part, and I'm going to say this quietly because my wife is in the house. She came walking out. And the replay was on. And she said, oh, we missed it. You didn't your alarm go off? And so she went outside to look for it. I didn't have the heart to tell her that what she was watching was an hour. And then I sort of said, oh, honey, that's an hour ago. You know, so she wasn't too. But, yeah, I set my alarm for 12:05 p.m. instead of 12:05 a.m. So did you saw it then on the television as well?
I know I didn't, as a matter of fact. I tried to stay up, and, I have to get up early for work, and I just
sure.
finally had to cash it in. It didn't go right at the beginning of the window.
Right.
So I didn't see it live, but as soon as I did wake up, I did go check it and saw that they went up. And it was quite a spectacular liftoff, of course, those night liftoffs, especially for something that big. You know, that thing's akin to the Saturn V. And we haven't had a night launch like that in 50 years, so since Apollo 17.
Well, that big, yeah. We've had night launches
yeah,
since then.
Exactly.
This is the first time – now, this has got to be technical. It's not the first time we've left Earth orbit since Apollo, because we've sent other stuff out there. But it's the first time we've sent something out – that someone's going to fly in, you know, I mean, that's obvious, you know, that's the difference. So that's, you know, this is going to be gone 25 days now instead of 42, I guess. But did you see, so have you seen the NASA, the recap that they did or the lead up to it? Did you watch the whole thing?
You mean where they talked about the mission? Yeah,
yeah.
did see that because in the preliminaries, you know, before the launch,
yeah.
they went over to this guy who went through the, and that was the most detailed explanation of what the mission was that I
yeah.
and I didn't know a lot about it, so I thought it was very interesting.
Yeah,
well, it's
I thought
ambitious,
it was
really.
Here's
you know, they got to test this thing, you know, and see how
yeah.
it performs.
Yeah, I mean, here's some stuff. I mean, it did the translunar injection, which was successful, but it's going to do an orbit of a sun. It's going to follow the Earth's orbital path. It's not going to go the full orbit around the sun. That's not, but it's going to be in a sun
it's like
orbital
like some
path.
Sort of retrograde type orbit, I think. It's a
yeah.
particular kind of orbit. Yeah.
Yeah. It won't be orbiting strictly orbiting Earth in this sense. I mean, that's the thing. That's kind of weird. I mean, it's only going to be 62 miles from the lunar surface. I mean, I just think that all of it is just amazing. So, I mean, the ambition is
get some great pictures and video, hopefully.
Yeah. Oh, but I mean, the ambition, you know, more lunar landings, colonization. I mean, they're just, you know, they were showing that, going to Mars, you know, I commented on this before, both with you and with others. I know I talked about it with Vito a few years ago, how rough Bill Nelson looked after he lost to Rick Scott
yeah.
earlier. I swear, last night the guy has reversed age probably 3 or 4 years since then. I mean, I thought he looked much better than he looked before.
I think they're all relieved they finally got that thing off the ground.
Yeah. So, okay, what? Tell us about the app, because you were talking about an app.
Well, I go through the YouTube in my on Xfinity, which is what I have, and I've got that thing where you just speak the channel. If you just speak NASA TV, it comes up through YouTube, and maybe the app's not the right word. Although I think it is kind of an app, and you get several different choices. They've got the main NASA channel, but then they also have some other NASA channels, one or two of which focused on Artemis 1 launch. And now there's one up that basically tracks Artemis 1, the mission, which I thought was very interesting because I went on there. I've just been on it once, but it would tell you, like, how far it is from the Earth, how far it is from the Moon, and, I think there's a little detail in the timeline, how fast it's traveling, that kind of thing. And there was also the first photograph that they had of the Earth from Artemis 1, and it's not quite far enough away to see the whole orb of the Earth. Saw about the top half of it, but it was still pretty cool, I thought, and it was a little bit dark. So hopefully as they get a little closer to the Moon and you get further out from the Earth, they'll have those, like, you know, the famous Apollo 17 picture, if you remember, of the Earth. And some of the other, you know, like if you remember, one of the striking things in Apollo 8 when men were going to the Moon and they're going to go into orbit for the very first time were those pictures of the Earth that were taken.
Yeah.
And just that was what, you know, everybody found so breathtaking, because the Earth is a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
And the Moon and the blackness of space are just kind of desolate. So so really this is kind of the first time in 50 years hopefully going to get the kind of Apollo-like pictures of Earth that we, you know, that we haven't seen since then.
Well,
really look
we were
forward
talking,
to that.
I mean, it's really possible, I think, now we're seeing it in our lifetime that we will see, I don't want to say unfettered space travel, but, I mean, you know, we could see, I don't want to say colonization, but we could see some kind of base on Mars in our lifetime. You know what I mean? I mean, it won't be... I don't think it'll be, I mean, you know, they may be comparing it to Antarctica is wrong. Maybe on another site, a tangent, it sort of is correct in that, you know, Antarctica, people don't just go there. I mean, you can go down to the South Pole on a tourist cruise, but you're not going into the brutalness of Antarctica. You're just out on the edges of it, which, you know, is a big continent. It's not, you know, it's not the same thing as being at McMurdo or whatever those are. So in our lifetime, I think we will see it where there will be people up there who will sleep. Like, you know, you think about it. I mean, cause how are they going to do that? But, you know, we'll see. I mean, you know, I'm not
sure
in our lifetime.
You know, before we get to Mars, we're going to try to do some sort of a permanent presence on the Moon, which never happened, of course, with Apollo. They just went there for a couple of days and left. And so that'll be interesting. And I think this, if they go by schedule, it's going to take off from here, because the next one is the full-blown Apollo 8 thing with a manned crew going to the Moon and into orbit and then coming back. And then the next one after that is the first landing on the Moon since 72. And between those two missions, the Artemis 2 and 3, they're going to be putting this gateway thing up that's going to be in an outer orbit around the Moon, which is like a little space station.
Yeah.
And they plan to use that to kind of ferry things back and forth to the Moon, the Moon's surface. So that's all going to happen supposedly in the next 3-4 years.
Yeah, and I don't see it, because I think that, you know, that with that station, I think that's the only way, in a sense, that they would be able to. I mean, I don't think you can make it habitable, so to speak, to be on the, you know, to sleep overnight on the Moon. You know what I mean? I just don't know how they could. I mean, that would require a little bit more than anyone has right now. But I mean, with a space station, think about it. You know, the guys in the Apollo who slept for a couple nights, so to speak, spending, you know, whole weeks and months orbiting the Moon and not the Earth. I mean, that's an amazing thing, because for a while, it didn't look like it was happening. You know, a lot of people blamed Obama for for killing the shuttle program. But in all honesty,
I do kind of blame him for putting the space program back. Not just that,
yeah.
But he also, you know, Bush was trying to get the Orion variant that we now see now going, you know, 15, 20 years ago. And then Obama came in 09 and just killed it. And to me, that's so short-sighted.
Oh, sure.
At least I give Biden credit for not doing that once he took office.
Yeah.
So, you know, and you get so much technical advancement from this, you know.
Absolutely.
Everybody.
But, I mean, I think in killing the shuttle program itself, I mean, people thought, you know, that's what killed it. I mean, yeah, he did kill other stuff, but the shuttle itself, that had outlived, I don't want to say outlived its usefulness, but, I mean, in a certain degree, we weren't going to get much further just, you know, tooling around in the shuttle. I mean,
right. That
just,
was never designed,
you know,
to go outside of low Earth orbit, I don't think.
Exactly. But now we're seeing, you know, we're going to see, you know, people returning from space. Not, you know, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, I don't think the shuttle will ever, I don't think we'll ever be in a shuttle type situation either. I mean, I think something going to the moon and people going to Mars or whatever, I think they're, the only way is the crash down, you know, because there's no plane type vehicle. I don't think they can get, at least
no,
now that we know
so,
of.
Yeah.
So, well, I mean, no. What is this? So this reminds, I guess you would say this is like one of the pre-Apollo 8 Apollo missions, I guess you'd say. But, you know, did any of those actually go out and orbit the moon for days?
No, they didn't. They were in low Earth orbit, the unmanned missions before, I think, Apollo 7 was the first one. And Apollo 7 just went in Earth orbit. So Apollo 8 was the big step. And here, although it's not manned, it's going all the way to the moon, as we know, it's going to be out there 25 days. And go into a retrograde orbit and then work its way back to Earth. So in a splashdown. So all the things that are going to have to be done when you have manned crews going to the moon are going to be done with this. You know, you've already had the TLI. You're going to have the orbital insertion burns. Then it's going to be in orbit. Then you're going to have the what they call the TEI, the trans-Earth injection, which is the big their version of the command module engines light up and take it back to Earth and then splash down through the
atmosphere. You know, here's something else they talked about that was amazing, that they're actually going to do a program intentional skip reentry. So they're going to have it skip once and then come back in under normal reentry procedures. I think that's
I did not know that. That's
yeah.
Very interesting. Yeah.
So it's going to do a, you know, because remember we used to talk about in college, you know, was there, you know, was the Soviet Union not honest? Did they have a, you know, there was always speculation that they had a mission that skipped off on reentry and just got hurtled out into, you know, into deep space and nobody ever knows what happened. You know, there's no proof of that or anything like that. But in this case, they're intentionally doing a skip. So, I mean, I think that's kind of bold. I mean, it's kind of, you know, because, I mean, it could, who knows what will happen. So, but, I think what we're going to have to, I mean, I'm going to have to make sure the next time that I just go out there and you know, because I'm close enough, I should have taken my paddleboard and just hung out and waited for it. But,
it won't be at 3 in the morning. Hopefully the next launch won't be at 3 in the morning. So. Yeah.
Well, but I mean, I would like a night launch we've seen several, you know, SpaceX night launches from out there. And it's just so much, nothing wrong with a day launch, don't get me wrong, but a night launch is just from out
there. Well, they're special. And I guess, you know, what you can do is you could, you know, you try to get your sleep in and knowing that you're going to want to be up at that hour. Yeah. I'm sure a lot of people did that last night.
Yeah, and that's just it's hard to tell. I don't know. I haven't seen anything today locally about it. But I mean, you know, before the first one, we actually had to cancel a paddle out there because the crowd out there for the night before for the first attempt was overwhelming. I mean, on an area that says no camping, I mean, obviously they couldn't stop it. So, you know, who knows if it's going to be like that. Now, I mean, you know, here's the thing for SpaceX launches, you know, which we consider kind of mundane comparatively speaking. They crowd out there to watch it. People still do that. So it's not like it's people blow out, you know, hopefully it's, you know, we never get complacent about it. So that's the thing. I mean, what would you compare this? Okay. So compare this maybe to Apollo 8 in terms of its, but by the same token, it's so much more ambitious than any of the Apollos when you consider that you know, what it's doing. I mean, the Apollo mission, the longest Apollo mission was like 12 days, I think, you know, so this is twice.
Right, right. And I think when they go to the manned missions, they're going to be also more lengthy than the Apollo missions. I mean, it's, I don't know if they're going to be, you know, but I think they're also planning, you know, maybe 20-day missions or something like that. Maybe not quite as long as this one is. But it's going further out from the moon than any of the Apollo spacecraft went in terms of this orbit and sort of circle around. So that's kind of interesting, too. And this is all really to see the performance of the spacecraft. And from what I've understand to the present, spacecraft is performed very well.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I couldn't really figure. I mean, I had to go look individually and couldn't. I'm going to try it again. How many people that walked on the moon are still alive?
Okay. We'll start out with Apollo 11. You got Buzz Aldrin. Then you've got, I think you have to go to Apollo 15, Dave Scott, Apollo 16, Charlie Duke, and Apollo 17, Jack Schmidt, and that's it.
It says, four. Four of them are still alive as of October 2022. So here's my question.
Yep.
Obviously, these people aren't going up. You know, none of these are going to go, you know, go fly up
there
and go to the moon.
By the way, all of Apollo 8 crew, just as a kind of side note, all the Apollo 8 crew is still alive.
Is still alive, yeah.
Borman and Borman and Lovell are 94, and Anders is like 91 or something like that. All three of them still alive.
Yeah, Borman. We were talking about it. Borman went on to run Eastern Airlines, of course. It's interesting to think about. How much input are they getting from these guys? I mean, I assume that they're sharp enough to give, you know, to give some kind of, I don't know if it's pointer.
Yeah, Gene Kranz, by the way, Gene Kranz is still alive too. So,
he didn't walk on the moon, did he?
No.
No, I didn't. Yeah,
no, but he was flight director, and he was when they tried to go in August, he was actually, I think, on talking with some people about it. But I don't know. I mean, those guys are getting up there, and they probably are not, I don't know how relevant any of their insights might be to the current technology that's being used, but I don't know, you know, like I say, they are getting up there. I don't think any of them were at the Cape or anything for the launch, as far as I know. So, I haven't heard any comments from them.
Yeah, that's what I'm just thinking in terms of I would think that people that are slated to go would want to talk to those guys a little bit. You know, I sure would, you know, I mean, considering we haven't been there in 50 years, I mean, who knows what they're going to, you know, run across. I mean, you know, that's just, you know, that's just a thing that's kind of interesting to me. Yeah. No, I thought
I would too. I would have wanted to talk to them. Yeah.
Yeah. I just think we're entering an exciting time. I think, you know, like you say, I give credit to Dopey Joe for not quashing this. In fact, of course, you know, that was probably Bill Nelson is probably in a sense a courtesy appointment, although he did fly the shuttle. He did represent the Space Coast area when he was in as a congressperson before becoming a senator. So, you know,
and he has, in all fairness, he has been a big proponent of manned spaceflight.
He has, absolutely, no doubt about that. So I mean, it's nice though to see this back in the, I don't know, to see us back in the game, so to speak. I mean, I just think it just does so much potentially for us as a country and, you know, for mankind in general. So yeah, I'm thrilled with it. So I just, that's why I wanted to just talk about it. You know, I mean, I just think it's going to be, you know, a game changer per se. I mean, you mentioned there has been a lot of collaboration. What was some of the, talk about some of that collaboration that we've had with, you know, what other countries have helped out in this development?
I did hear some discussion about how the European Space Agency, ESA, has contributed a lot as far as particularly to construction of the command module, the service module part, you know, the engine part, and I think also Canada and Japan have made some contributions too, but I think the European Space Agency has probably made the biggest. I don't think there's any Russian involvement of any kind, which is probably a good thing.
Yeah, Although, you know, we've been orbiting with them at times for Mir and all that stuff. So I assume that's done now. But in fact, it is done. I remember that partnership ended.
Yeah, because
so
they've pretty much said they're done with all of us. They're not even going to participate, I guess, in the space space station once I think they get their last people home.
Yeah. Well, that's to their detriment, obviously. So, well, it'll be awesome.
Yep.
So, hey, well, I'm going to let you run, and I'm going to take off too, so that you can get to the game. I'm not going to be able to watch it tonight, but please report back. I mean, we'll talk by text and stuff. So, thanks for being on again, and of course, go Hawks this weekend, tonight and this weekend. So, text a little bit to see what because I won't be watching. So, text your impressions before the game's over.
We'll do.
Cool.
Okay.
Thanks for being on, man. We'll talk to you later.
Okay. Thanks, Hank. Take care.
All right. Okay. Hawkeye Mike with the, as always, insightful info. He and I we would watch the right stuff in college and go through the almanacs and read about all the different stuff, you know, different astronauts. And I did not, so I thought there was more than four. I thought there were six for some reason, but now it is four. And you would think that they would want to talk to these guys. But anyway, okay, well, before we cut out, and like I said, I had to let Mike go. And this was a little bit abbreviated. Thanks to Vito for getting me back in here. Before I go, there's a couple good laughies I wanted to talk about. Babylon B had a couple good ones. This one's really good. It said, Arizona announces they have finished counting and Calvin Coolidge has won their three electoral votes. I mean, there are people that are going to hear that or read that and not understand it, really. Totally not understand it, not understand the sarcasm. And then here's another one. This one's even better. It's a headline. Nation unsure whether to support party that runs brain-damaged candidates or party that loses to brain-damaged candidates. Oh, and I'll talk, you know, I'm going to talk next week because I did find an article that I started to read about some of what happened in the Oz Fetterman race. As Mike talked last week, Oz never really had a platform per se. He just sort of got out there and maybe a platform would have helped. But in the meantime, we will be back next week, of course. If you're a Hawkeye fan, please watch the game and root them on tonight. And, of course, this Saturday going up to Minnesota will be tough. In the meantime, folks, have a great night. Have a great rest of the week. Have a great weekend. And we will see you back here next week at 5:30 Eastern Time. And hopefully without the little problems. I'll send you out with a little Gino Vanelli, I guess. That's what we'll do. Little Gino Vanelli. Good night, folks. God bless.
My, what a marvelous time. Wear your pants and leather shoes. You gotta win and never lose. Oh, and why, oh, why? Oh, Jack, I cry. If it happens, why such a glorious guy? Easy friends or easy foe? Ooh, you never know. Oh, am I, oh my. Oh, Jack, you'll die. Save your life and run away. What are my chances of living if I were to stay close to you? Jack, all this time and I'll give it
Good night, folks. Have a good one.